Chapter 7. The Power of Language. Advanced Speaking and Listening Skills at Work. Change your language, and you change your thoughts. Carl Albrecht, billionaire co-founder of the Aldi supermarket chain. In the previous chapter, we discussed some aspects of language and how to use these at work. In this chapter, we will cover how to use other aspects of language to enhance your ability to communicate to colleagues, customers, and other stakeholders. In particular, we will look at how to think in terms of the big picture or detail as appropriate, and to change the level of the communication. Use language to encourage lateral thinking and brainstorming. Understand the power of some everyday words. Use language that is deliberately vague to influence at work. Ask insightful and relevant questions. Use stories and analogies effectively at work. Please note that though there is some terminology and names of language patterns used in this chapter, it is not a chapter on grammar. In this chapter, I will highlight how the language patterns and models which you will learn here are used in every verbal communication at work. The only question is, how effectively are they used? Why are we covering language? As we have already seen, language is one of the key filters in the communication model, and words are important when maintaining rapport, especially once rapport has initially been built. Effective use of language can also help almost all business activities involving presenting ideas and asking questions, such as selling, marketing, and advertising, influencing staff, colleagues, patients, and suppliers, negotiations, consultancy, coaching, training and teaching, presenting, interviewing, as interviewer or interviewee. Let's look at the first main topic, known as the hierarchy of ideas. The hierarchy of ideas. This model relates to the level of detail involved in a communication, which can range from the big picture and abstract, known in NLP as big chunk, through to the specific and detailed, small chunk. We can use this model to change our own or other people's level from big chunk to small chunk or vice versa, and also to think laterally. Examples of abstract, big chunk ideas in the workplace include concepts such as efficiency, productivity, prosperity, equal opportunities, and growth prospects. Detail, small chunk, is obtained by getting into the specifics of who, what, when, where, and how. One of the main reasons why this is so useful is that, according to Please Understand Me by Kiersey and Bates, which explains the well-known Myers-Briggs Type Indicator, MBTI, personality profiling system, the difference between big and small chunk are a major source of communication difficulties and disagreements between people. Other business uses of this model include being able to build rapport at work. One of the ways to build rapport using words is to match chunk size. For example, if a director has a preference for big chunk, typically he would want an overview of your message rather than lots of detail. Improving your chances of promotion, because generally the more senior you are, the more you will need to be able to see the overview as well as be able to drill down into the detail if there are problems. For example, a finance director will need to understand how the whole business works and how the finances of the business are impacted by changes in foreign exchange rates and the economic situation, whereas an accounts clerk is more likely to be concerned with details shown on specific invoices. You can use the hierarchy of ideas to move to a bigger chunk, known as chunking up or upward, for the purpose of, for example, gaining agreement and buy-in when negotiating and speaking to teams. Most people would agree that prosperity, a big chunk concept, is desirable. They may disagree on how to get there or what prosperity actually means. Setting mission statements and values. Both are big chunk concepts for an organization, which helps to create an engaged workforce. Agreeing on the purpose of a new policy or system so that management can select one that fully meets their needs. Conversely, you can use the hierarchy of ideas to move to a smaller chunk, known as chunking down or downward, for the purpose of, for example, making sure that everyone involved in a project knows exactly what they are doing and when, so that targets or deadlines are met. Coaching or managing people around the specific tasks required to achieve their goals. Investigating problems or underperformance to help resolve it. How to use the principles of chunking. Let's assume that you were discussing the purchase of a new computer system. Here are some questions to ask if you want to chunk up. What is the benefit or purpose of the new system? What will the new system get for you or us? What is the new system an example of? What is the intention of having the new system? As the speaker, you would choose the question or questions most relevant to the specific situation and what you wanted to gain from asking the question, given what had been said previously in the discussion. To chunk down, you could ask the following questions. Who exactly will authorize the purchase of the new system? Who will we buy it from? When will the purchase be authorized? When will it be delivered? How much will the new system cost? How exactly are we going to use the new system? Where exactly are you going to put the new system? What is the specification of the new system? What are examples or types of new systems that we could buy in the future? Exercise 7.1. Notice for yourself whether you are more comfortable in the big picture, the detail, or are equally comfortable with both. You can do this several ways. For example, noticing how comfortable or not you are when getting into the details of a situation. Asking yourself the chunking up and chunking down questions about various work challenges, and noticing where you feel most comfortable. You can also do this with clients, colleagues, and staff by noticing how much detail they give you, and also how tolerant they are to detail. This point is expanded in Chapter 15 in the section on Chunk Size Filter. Remember that one way to build rapport using words is to match the amount of detail that someone prefers. You can use the hierarchy of ideas to chunk laterally, for example, if you have reached an impasse when negotiating or in a brainstorming session. You do this as follows. 1. Ask a chunking up question from those listed on the Hierarchy of Ideas Diagram 7.1, available in the companion PDF. 2. Chunk down, asking for a different example or a different way. Story 7.1 illustrates this. Story 7.1. One of my NLP mentors was hired to help a company negotiate with a trade union. He spoke to the company management and asked what they wanted, then chunked up a couple of levels until very abstract concepts were mentioned, such as expansion. He spoke to the unions, and unsurprisingly, they wanted a pay raise. He asked them some chunking up questions and found that the real purpose of the pay raise was so that the employees could have a comfortable retirement. Thinking laterally, he asked himself, the unions, and the management how else employees could have a comfortable retirement rather than by having the level of pay increase being demanded. They realized that increased pension contributions would be an acceptable way forward, and hence proceeded to agree on the various details. So, in this example, chunking up to comfortable retirement and then asking for a different way to achieve this led to an agreement. Tip 7.1. To enhance your ability to work with both detail and abstract concepts, pick a current challenge at work and chunk up a few levels until you reach a highly abstract concept, for example, profitability, staff engagement, or fulfillment. Chunk downward a few levels from the challenge until you understand the necessary detail. If you are naturally stronger at one level, work on the opposite until you are more comfortable at that level, if that would be useful to you. The hierarchy of ideas is summarized in Diagram 7.1 in the companion PDF. Applications in the workplace. You can use the hierarchy of ideas in several ways at work. Career progression. You could frequently ask yourself chunking up questions about work issues and topics. For example, an accounts clerk looking to advance their career might ask themselves, "What's the purpose of making sure that all the invoices are dispatched correctly and on time?" Generally, the higher you go in an organization, the more you will be expected to see a bigger picture. Coaching and managing other people to improve by using relevant questions. Goal setting. If you review Chapter 4, you will notice that there are questions that chunk up and others that chunk down. Creating alternative solutions and problem solving using lateral chunking. Conflict resolution and negotiations. Chunk up and then chunk down only as quickly as it enables you to maintain rapport. Fact-finding and troubleshooting, chunking down. Meetings. Ensure that they stay on track by knowing the purpose of the meeting, chunking up, and also if a comment appears to be taking the meeting off track, asking politely how that point specifically relates to the purpose of the meeting. Creating a corporate vision or mission statement by chunking up to a really abstract level. Generating action plans at meetings or for projects, chunking down. Having covered the idea of chunking, let's now move on to another model of language. Implied meanings within language. Within NLP, there is a topic called linguistic presuppositions. These are completely different from the NLP presuppositions covered in Chapter 3. Linguistic presuppositions can be defined as what is automatically assumed in a sentence or phrase in order for that sentence to make sense. For example, the sentence, "The man sees the dog," presupposes three things. There is a man. He can see. There is a dog. Though this example is very obvious, this model of language will help you to refine your communication so that you influence the listener, or listeners, and readers the way you want to, and to better understand how people think by how they speak. Remember Covey's quote, "Seek first to understand, then be understood." Moreover, if you read the editorial articles in a quality national newspaper, you will find several examples of how the editor uses linguistic presuppositions, whether they are aware of it or not. You cannot avoid using these models because they are inherent in language. You can, however, choose to learn how to use them even more effectively than you currently do. The main forms of linguistic presupposition. We will cover 10 main forms. I will give you the name and brief explanation of the presupposition with an example of how you can use each of them in the workplace. There are almost unlimited uses of this type of language, so there will be no specific section on application in the workplace. For more extensive coverage and a list of 29 types of linguistic presupposition, please read The Structure of Magic, Volume 1, by Richard Bandler and John Grinder. The statements that follow are standalone statements, purely to illustrate the points being made. It is important to remember that these sentences do not have to be true. They do not need to be plausible, given the context in which they are said. In each of the examples that follow, the presupposition being demonstrated is emphasized for your reference. As with all topics covered in this audiobook, please ensure that you are in rapport, have a positive intention for the other person or persons, and use common sense when using these language patterns. Existence. These are nouns, places, and people, and every sentence will have at least one presupposition of existence included in it. When managing a member of staff, you could say, "Let me know when you've found the solution," or "You haven't found the solution yet." Both presuppose that a solution exists, which can motivate your colleague to keep searching for one. Necessity. These are verbs such as have to, got to, should, must, and need to, which indicate the rules or beliefs that someone has. You can use these verbs if you want to create some form of rule or strongly encourage people to do something. We need to hurry up. We should be hitting our targets this year. You've got to get this right. Possibility, impossibility. These are verbs that imply that things are possible or not possible, such as can or can't, could or couldn't, might or might not, is possible or isn't possible. We can't tell our boss this. We could exceed our targets. You can do a great presentation. You can use these when advertising to create the impression that something will become possible for the customer once they have purchased your product or service. Notice the second word in this sentence. This is another example of how this linguistic presupposition can be used. Causation. These are words or verbs that imply some form of causation or link. For example, if, then, because, make, cause, as you, then you. You can use these types of words to create a linkage in someone's mind, if that would be useful. Because you've made so many cold calls this quarter, you'll become more successful. If you present well, then you'll be noticed. Learning from mistakes makes you more effective. Equivalences. These are when two things or concepts are made to appear equal or synonymous. For example, verbs such as to be, to mean, to represent. You are a good negotiator. That is, you equals good negotiator. Keeping eye contact when interviewing means you are interested. My boss shouting means she is really passionate about results. $1,000 represents good value. You can use these to create a relationship or connection between two concepts. For example, you and good negotiator, $1,000 and good value. Please note that causation relates to a sequence, whereas equivalence relates to things being simultaneous. Awareness. This presupposition relates to people being able to be aware of something and is indicated by the use of words relating to senses or awareness. For example, see, hear, feel, understand, realize, notice, and to be aware of. You can use these types of presuppositions to reduce the likelihood of objections or doubt about whether something exists. John saw the gap in the market. The reader or listener would probably not question whether there was, in fact, a gap in the market. You realized that there was a great opportunity. She noticed the excellent atmosphere in the office. It is also interesting that the previous sentences could be stated in the negative, where the presuppositions would still apply. So, John didn't see the gap in the market still presupposes that there's a gap in the market. Time. The concept of time is really important in how we create our reality. Though some of the finer details are outside the scope of this audiobook, even the following simple example will illustrate the impact. We have a problem. Action is probably required. We had a problem. No action is required. Presuppositions of time can be indicated by words such as before, after, then, now, stop, yet, and by changing the verb's tense. Please let me know your plans after you've made your decision. Before you leave the office today, please check that the presentation is finished. Staff member, I've been having a problem with Joe. Coach, manager, okay, what has been the problem? This subtly puts the problem into the past rather than, okay, what is the problem, which unfortunately keeps it alive for the staff member. Adjective and adverb. Adjectives, which describe nouns, and adverbs, which describe verbs and usually end in ly, can add impact to a sentence. I'm wondering how easily you'll be able to find the solution. Easily focuses attention on how easy it will be rather than whether a solution exists. How quickly will you be able to get me the report? Presupposes that the person will be able to do it. Client, this situation has been causing us delays for a while. Consultant, wanting to reassure the client that they are experts and can fix the problem. Because we've been in this industry for years, we've seen relatively simple problems like this before. We can easily have it sorted for you in a week. Or indicates that there is a choice. Sometimes in business, you want to reduce the possibility of endless choices. For example, we can meet on Friday at 3:15 or Tuesday at 2. Which would you prefer? Cash or credit card. Ordinal and numerical. This relates to sequences or numbers of events, such as first, last, next, second, initial, and final. My latest book is about selling, presupposes that the person has written books previously. Similarly, my fourth book implies that there have been three previous books and possibly subsequent books. Here's the fifth and final point. Once you've done that, let me know and I'll give you the next installment of the story, presupposes that there is something else to be learned or done. Putting it all together. Scenario. A director addressing their team at the start of the annual staff meeting. Good morning. Welcome to our third annual staff meeting. And the fact that there is such a big turnout means that you're all extremely excited to take the organization forward to the next level. The main reason we're all here is so that we can look for even better ways to do this after last year's great improvement. And we have to move forward because standing still means falling behind our competitors. And whether we move forward quickly or slightly less quickly, our aim has to be focused on our success and on becoming number one. Exercise 7.2. approximately 5 minutes. Listen through the previous paragraph and see if you can spot how many examples of linguistic presuppositions are used. Check your answers against those in Appendix A, available in the companion PDF. Small words with big meanings. Following on from the previous topic, here are some small words that have disproportionately large meanings, which are often outside the conscious awareness of the speaker or listener. Small word, but, although, however. Implied meaning. But negates what has previously been said, as do the other words to a lesser extent. That was a great presentation, but, however, although, you could make it even better by, implies that it wasn't a great presentation. Comment. It is much more useful to use and instead of but, unless you do want to negate what has been said. For example, if the speaker mentions something negative, such as all the difficulties they have had meeting the deadline, you can reply, "Yes, it was difficult, but you've learned so much from it." Small word. Try. Implied meaning. Try implies that something will be difficult and/or you might not succeed. As a manager, do you want your staff member to try to get you the report at 5 p.m. today or to get you the report at 5 p.m. today? Comment. Remove the word try from your vocabulary unless it is in a situation where the person has little competence in the area and you want them to experiment or try something new. Small word. Don't. Implied meaning. If you ask someone not to do something, they have to think about doing it, even momentarily, before they can think of an alternative. Don't think about your happiest moment now. This is particularly relevant when the subject relates to an automatic, unconscious response, such as, "Don't worry," or, "Don't analyze my motives." Comment. Tell someone what you want them to do rather than what you don't want them to do. If it is important to say what you don't want them to do, emphasize what you do want them to do. Relax or go with the flow. Small word, or. Implied meaning. As we know from the previous section, or can sometimes limit the perception someone has about their range of options. On my training courses, when I say, "You can do X or Y," and ask them how many options they have, the usual reply is one or two. In practice, there are numerous options if you include all the other options that could exist apart from X or Y. Comment. Whenever you hear the word or, and you do not want your or other people's thinking to be limited, for example, in brainstorming meetings, mention that it could be useful to explore other options apart from those that are presented. Small word. Yet. Implied meaning. Adding yet to the end of a sentence can change the meaning significantly. "I can't do presentations" is very different than "I can't do presentations yet." Comment. Adding yet when someone states an apparent limitation can open the door of possibility. Small word. If. When. Implied meaning. If implies conditionality. When implies that it will happen. Comment. Choose which will be most useful in the situation. If the board rejects our proposal, or when you buy this product. Small word. Can. Can't. Implied meaning. The word can and its negative can't have two possible meanings. One meaning is that the person is not allowed or authorized to do something. The other meaning is that the person does not have the capability to do something. Comment. Sometimes it can be useful to seek clarification about what someone means if they say they can't do something, or to clarify what you mean when you use can or can't. Small word. Is. Implied meaning. As we have seen before, the verb to be indicates that something equals something else. Unfortunately, the word is sometimes misused. For example, "This is difficult to do," or "It is hard to do X." The word is gives the sentence the same construction and validity as "The sun is hot." Comment. it is more useful for the speaker to say instead, "I haven't yet found it easy to do X." This language helps the speaker to own the specific challenge, rather than using language which could create the impression that it absolutely is a particular way. Exercise 7.3. Pay attention to what people are saying at meetings and notice how they use the small words previously listed and what impact these words have on you and on the people around you. In your mind, decide what you would say to make the message even more effective. As a separate exercise, practice using these words, or one of the relevant alternatives suggested, to enhance the message you wish to send. Abstract language. Returning to the hierarchy of ideas and the notion of abstract and specific thinking, there are two language models that can be extremely useful in the workplace. The first uses abstract language and is based on the language patterns used by the eminent hypnotherapist Milton Erickson. He used language in such a way that it appeared vague and abstract, which enabled his clients to make up their own meaning in their head. He found it to be an excellent way to bypass resistance that clients might have against going into a trance. Unsurprisingly, his language model is known as the Milton model. Why learn about abstract language? These language patterns are extremely useful for influencing people, and, indeed, there is an excellent book called Unlimited Selling Power by the leading business sales consultants Dr. Donald J. Moyne and Dr. Kenneth Lloyd, which explains how to use these hypnotic language patterns in the world of sales. They can also be used in a variety of situations where you want to influence, for example, in presentations and meetings. Because these language patterns are used every day at work, learning how to use them effectively will help you to influence more effectively. Story 7.2. One of my fellow NLP trainers said that she noticed that all businesses use these language patterns daily because they are part of everyday language. The problem was that these patterns were used in an ineffective way, which often caused the opposite effect to that which was intended. By the way, there are at least 5 examples of abstract language patterns in this story, which you will be able to spot once you have heard this section. There are around 22 abstract language patterns, and I will list and briefly explain the 15 most relevant to the workplace, with examples, with the subsequent 2 sections giving guidance on how to use them at work. Some of the patterns have already been covered in the section on linguistic presuppositions. The name of the pattern, as it is known in the NLP world, is mentioned if relevant. Please note that some of the patterns are similar to each other. Additional reading material is listed in the Resources for Further Learning section in the companion PDF to this audiobook. Pattern: assumptions, mind reads. Description: claiming to know how someone is thinking or feeling. Examples at work: I know you're curious about how we can achieve our targets. You're probably wondering why this is such an important meeting. Pattern: impersonal judgments, lost performatives. Description: making a judgment or assessment without saying who is doing the judging. Examples at work: it's good that you're curious about how we can achieve our targets. It's encouraging that you're so motivated. That's right. Pattern: causations, cause and effect. Description: where one thing causes or leads to something else. Examples at work: because you are here, you will learn lots of things. If you attend the seminars, you will get your professional qualification. Pattern: equivalences, complex equivalence. Description: where one thing equals or means something else. Examples at work: making these cold calls means you will hit your target. Putting our best people on your account demonstrates our commitment to you. This conversation is the start of a new relationship. Pattern: presuppositions. Description: where someone assumes that something is true. Examples at work: my clients are really interested in the great service I give them. This presupposes the person has clients, that they are interested in the service given, and that the service is great. Pattern: universals, universal quantifiers. Description: global words such as all, every, each, none, no one, never, always. Examples at work: you all want the best for the team. We always strive to be responsive to our clients. We are never knowingly undersold. Pattern. Possibility. Necessity. Modal operators of possibility or necessity. Description. Words that indicate rules, possibility or impossibility. Examples at work. We can't afford to let the competition get ahead of us. We need to keep on innovating. We mustn't fall into the trap of negative thinking. Pattern. Frozen verbs. Nominalizations. Description. These are process words turned into an abstract noun. Commitment, to commit. Decision, to decide. Knowledge, to know. Management, to manage. Success, to succeed. Examples at work. Our commitment to you. The decision has been made. The management of the process was excellent. My understanding is that we will proceed tomorrow. Pattern. Unspecified verb. Description. Where there is no evidence of how the verb is applied. Examples at work. He underestimated me. We can't continue. Pattern. Inserted questions. Tag questions. Description. Questions used to either emphasize or gain agreement. Examples at work. You can do that, can't you? You know what I mean, don't you? You've been happy with our products before, haven't you? Pattern. Simple deletions. Description. Where so much information is left out that there could be various interpretations. Examples at work. I am happy. With the weather, the results, the night's sleep I had. Pattern. Unspecified person or subject. Lack of referential index. Description. Where it is not clear who is the subject of the sentence. Examples at work. They arrived on time. People say the results are improving. Pattern. Unspecified comparisons. Comparative deletions. Description. Where something is compared to something else without stating what it is compared to. Advertisers use this frequently. Examples at work. We dry harder. Our washing powder washed whiter. We give you better value. We offer you more. Pattern. Pacing. Pacing current experience. Please note that though this is not the same as pacing to build in rapport, Chapter 5, it often has the effect of demonstrating that you are on the same wavelength as people, which will aid rapport building. Description. Making a statement or series of statements that is undeniably true. This is similar to the yes set used in selling, whereby salespeople will seek to get the customer into the habit of saying yes, with a view to then getting them to say yes to buying the product. Examples at work. You're sitting here, listening to my audiobook, learning about language patterns. In a seminar. You've come here on this sunny, cloudy, dry, wet day to learn about how to... Pattern. Impossible behaviors. Selectional restriction violations. Description. Where it is not possible for someone or something to have the response or do the behavior. Examples at work. This house is crying out for a careful, loving owner. Real estate agent. This car loves to be driven firmly. Sports car salesperson. Putting it all together. Scenario. You are setting the scene for an important meeting about business development. Good morning. Thank you all for coming. Some of you have traveled a long distance, some a shorter distance, to be here on time. I guess you're probably wondering why I asked you to come here on this sunny morning. And it's good that you're wondering, because this curiosity is the basis of how we can move forward to achieve the success and excellence that we all want to achieve. We all want more success and to be happy, don't we? And that's good, because in this economic environment, we need to progress. People expect it. Successful companies never stand still. Successful companies keep looking for ways forward. Exercise 7.4, approximately 5 minutes. Re-listen to the previous paragraph and notice how each of the abstract patterns was used at least once. Check your answers against those in Appendix A, available in the companion PDF to this audiobook. Applications in the workplace. These Milton Model abstract language patterns can be used in a variety of situations, such as selling, to bypass resistance, presenting, to captivate the audience, inspiring a team, coaching a client, running a training course, advertising. Here is a brief extract from the financial reports of a global motor manufacturer talking about one of its guiding principles to illustrate how even the most competitive businesses use these types of language constructs, whether knowingly or otherwise. I note the key Milton model language pattern and/or the linguistic presupposition. This principle is intended to keep the customer at the center of everything, universal, we do, unspecified verb, and success, frozen verb, is, equivalence, pretty easy, adjective, to define. It means, equivalence, creating vehicles that people, unspecified person, desire, value, and are proud to own. When we get this right, it, cause and effect, transforms our reputation and the company's bottom line. Just look, awareness, at the performance of the 2000XX Model 1 in the United States and compare it to the Model 2 2 years previously. Time. The average transaction price for Model 2 is about 28% higher. Its projected resale value after 3 years is 32% higher, and it gets 14% better highway fuel economy, according to EPA estimates. This is, equivalence, the kind of success, existence, we plan to replicate every universal opportunity we get. Exercise 7.5. Record or watch on the Internet an interview with a politician or business leader. Notice how often the interviewee uses Milton model patterns, whether they realize it or not, and also notice the impact that each pattern has on you. Let's now look at more detailed language. Power questions. If you do not know how to ask the right question, you will discover nothing. William Edwards Deming, American business philosopher and consultant. Just as there is a language model using abstract language, there is a model that uses more specific language and which seeks to ask questions to uncover information that might have been deleted, distorted, or generalized. These questions are based on those that the eminent therapist Virginia Satir, one of the other therapists modeled by Bandler and Grinder when developing NLP, asked when working with her clients. They can be easily used at work to uncover relevant information and will help you to ask the right kind of question at the right time. In NLP, these power questions are known as the meta model and occasionally as the precision model. Why power questions are so useful? Knowing the right kind of question to ask can be useful in many situations. For example, selling, to uncover where the client's problems are and the related implications. Handling objections. Coaching, to get specific about the client's actions. Project planning. Meetings, to ensure that actions are agreed. The questions. As we discussed in Chapter 2, every person deletes, distorts, and generalizes information. Given that we all do this, it is not surprising that the language we use reflects these internal filtering processes. Let's consider the language patterns that fall into these three categories and the related meta-model question. You will recognize the patterns from the Milton model before. There is sometimes more than one possible response, and these are listed. Please use common sense when choosing which question to ask, or, indeed, whether to ask a meta-model question at all. Distortions. Pattern. Assumptions. Mind reads. Example. I know you're curious why I called the meeting. Question or response. How do you know I'm curious? Pattern. Impersonal judgments. Lost performatives. Example. It's good to work hard. Question or response. Who says it's good? How do you know it's good? Pattern. Causations. Cause and effect. Example. Presentations make me nervous. Question or response. How specifically do they make you feel nervous? Pattern. Equivalences. Complex equivalence. Example. The client not returning my call means he's not interested. Question or response. How does the client not returning your call mean he's not interested? Have you ever not returned someone's call quickly and yet been interested? That is, counterexample. Pattern. Presuppositions. Example. If my boss was really interested in us, he would spend more time telling people how good we are. Question or response. How do you know your boss isn't interested in you? How do you know he doesn't tell people how good you are? Generalizations. Pattern. Universals. Universal quantifiers. Example. We never buy from new suppliers. We always get 5 quotes. Question or response? Never? Surely you must have bought from a new supplier at some time. Always? What would happen if you didn't? Look for counterexamples. Pattern. Possibility, impossibility. Modal operators of possibility or impossibility. Example. We can't buy from you. I might work hard this week. Question or response. What would happen if you did? What stops you? What would happen if you didn't? Pattern. Necessity. Modal operators of necessity. Example. We have to expand abroad. Question or response. What would happen if we didn't? Pattern. Frozen verbs. Nominalizations. Example. The communication is poor in this office. I don't like his style of management. Question or response. How would you like people to communicate instead? Turn the noun back into a process. How would you like him to manage instead? Pattern. Unspecified verbs. Example. He ignored us. Question or response. What specifically did he do or not do that made you think he ignored you? Pattern. Simple deletions. I'm upset. Question or response. About what exactly? Pattern. Unspecified person or subject. Lack of referential index. Example. They're not comfortable. Question or response. Who exactly isn't comfortable? Pattern. Unspecified comparisons. Comparative deletions. Example. That's expensive. Your competitors are better. Question or response. Compared to what? Better than who or what? In what way exactly are they better? As you will have spotted, many of the Milton model patterns have an associated metamodal response because they are either end of the spectrum of language. Because distortions tend to have the biggest impact on people's thinking, followed by generalizations and then deletions, if there's more than one type in a sentence, challenge the distortions before the generalizations, and generalizations before deletions. Tip 7.2. Please be clear about the purpose of asking a power question. I have seen people use these questions as a way to annoy other people and hijack a discussion, which has no tangible benefit for anyone. Exercise 7.6. Revisit the interview with a politician or business leader mentioned in Exercise 7.5. Listen to the questions that the interviewer is asking to obtain information. With your knowledge now, what questions would you ask instead? Which statements made by the politician or business leader would you challenge, and using which questions? Applications of power questions. There are numerous work applications. Interviewing candidates to find out what they actually did in previous roles. Interviewing prospective employers to find out exactly what the role entails. Selling to find out exactly what the prospect wants and how they would know that they had it. Managing and coaching to pin down employees and clients about what they are going to do and when. Project planning and actions from meetings to agree who exactly will do what and by when. Contracts and negotiations to ensure that the details are as you want. Let's now move on to the final language topic. Stories, analogies, and metaphors. The use of stories, analogies, and metaphors can be an effective way to illustrate and explain the point you are making to staff, clients, and interviewers, overcome resistance to your ideas from staff, prospects, customers, and coaching clients, help your audience to remember the points you are making at meetings and presentations, engage your audience even more when making presentations. Stories and metaphors are effective because our automatic response process, that is, our unconscious mind, is like that of a young child. Those of us who have been around young children know how engaged they are when you tell them stories, as it allows their mind to create a story inside their own head. Many people can remember fairy tales and those stories their grandparents told them when they were young, yet they might not be able to remember much about what happened at a meeting a few weeks ago. Here are some examples of how you can use metaphors. Telling a story or giving an example of how you overcame a challenge that is similar to the one that is being faced by the person you are speaking to, for example, a client, colleague, supplier. Telling a story about how someone else overcame the challenge. This is sometimes more effective than telling a story about yourself because it is more detached from the situation. The story could be about someone you know, such as another client, or a well-known situation in the public arena, or it can be a fable. Telling a story about how another client used your services is a way to overcome sales objections. You will have noticed that I use examples and stories in this audiobook to illustrate the points I am making. Tip 7.3. Pay attention to speakers whom you find engaging, and notice how they use stories to explain their ideas. Practice the use of relevant stories when at relatively unimportant meetings, and notice the impact on the listeners. Once you feel comfortable with using stories, then, if appropriate, use them at more important meetings. Part 3. Some specific NLP techniques. Part 3 looks at some of the NLP techniques and models that you can use in the workplace. Chapter 8 looks at a model that can be used to structure the way you think about situations and inform you about how to make changes that will lead to greater levels of congruence and alignment, both individually and organizationally. Chapter 9 describes how you can alter the way you think about situations that might previously have challenged you or where you respond in unhelpful ways. Chapter 10 covers how to get into a useful state almost at the click of your fingers and how to use these principles at work. Chapter 11 covers an extremely useful technique that will help you see other perspectives and which can be used in a variety of business situations. Chapter 12 discusses how to influence in conversation the way colleagues and clients perceive situations and how to turn negatives into positives. Chapter 13 follows from the principles of Chapter 12 and explains methods to change other people's beliefs during conversation. A word about NLP interventions. Part 3 describes how to use various NLP techniques to make changes in the way you think and feel about a situation. In NLP, we call these techniques interventions. Throughout the whole process of any intervention, it is essential to ensure that you are in rapport with the person or persons you are interacting with. Chapter 5. You use sensory acuity to calibrate how the other person or persons is or are feeling. Chapter 5. You will also find it extremely useful to bear in mind and use where appropriate representational systems, predicates, and I patterns. Chapter 6. And relevant aspects of the different language models. Chapter 7. Before starting the intervention, I often find it useful to ask my clients to rank their current situation or response on a scale of 1 to 10 and their desired situation on the same scale, and how they would know in 10 to 20 minutes, the typical duration of interventions, that they were at the desired score and had achieved what they wanted from the exercise. By way of an example, if a client is nervous about going for an interview, they may feel 4 out of 10 confident and would like to feel 9 or 10. And they would know that they would be feeling 9 out of 10 if the knot they had in their stomach at the thought of the interview disappeared, and if they were looking forward to the interview. This scaling exercise is a useful way to focus your mind and to provide a check to know that the intervention has worked. One of the essential aspects of doing interventions is that the consequences of making the change to your thinking, feeling, and hence behaviors are fully considered beforehand. This is known as doing an ecology check. You learned about ecology from Smarter Goals in Chapter 4. The 4 ecology questions can be extremely useful. I recommend that you do ecology checks by asking yourself, or your client if you are coaching or managing them, the following questions. Are there any negative consequences whatsoever about making the change that will result from the intervention? For example, following on from the previous example, could feeling 10 out of 10 confident about the interview lead to a blasé attitude? Ideally, there should be no negative consequences. What are the positive consequences? List or think of as many as you can, starting with the professional impact, and then, if possible, the knock-on benefits, for example, on your home life and health. The more you can identify, the more successful the intervention is likely to be, because you will be more motivated to do it. You can use the 4 ecology questions instead of, or in addition to, the questions about negative and positive consequences. On a scale of 0 to 100%, where 0% means you don't want to do this, and 100% means you absolutely do want to make the changes, how much do you want to do it? My suggestion is to proceed only if it's 100%. Occasionally, there will be some minor negative consequences of doing the intervention. For example, doing well in an interview might mean a temporary increase in workload or pressure if you get the job or promotion. If this is the case, check that the benefits significantly outweigh the minor downsides. Some advice. As indicated in the eye patterns section of Chapter 6, people often move their eyes to different areas or stare ahead when thinking and searching for information internally. Though sitting opposite someone in typical working situations is commonplace, subject to any cultural factors, when guiding people through the NLP processes covered in chapters 8 to 11, it is normally helpful to them if you are either at their side or at an angle to them, as opposed to being directly in front of them. Other prerequisites for NLP interventions. Here are some additional points already made in the introduction, of which I would like to remind you. These points are relevant before doing any NLP intervention in a coaching or guiding context. Firstly, especially when you are new to NLP, best results are gained by following the process as written, especially when you are doing this by yourself or guiding a colleague or coaching a client through the process. As you become more familiar with the technique and have had some professional NLP training, you can be a little more flexible. Secondly, I strongly recommend that you listen to the process through more than once before doing the technique, and if you use it with someone else, listen as many times as you require so that you are absolutely clear as to how to do it. Finally, these techniques are to be used with individuals only as a coaching, mentoring, or management tool for improving work performance, not as a form of psychotherapy, unless you are specifically trained in psychotherapy. Chapter 8, Organizational and Personal Alignment. Walking your talk. Sir, I'm helping to put a man on the moon. A janitor at NASA, in response to President John F. Kennedy asking him what he did at NASA. Individuals and organizations tend to function more productively if there is an internal congruence or alignment about what they are doing. For example, are they being true to themselves and what's really important to them? In this chapter, we will be covering a model that will help both you as an individual and your organization to be able to become even more congruent, as well as providing a structure for approaching challenges and problems. The model is known in NLP as the Neurological Levels Model. Why is this model so useful? You can use the model in several ways. As a business leader, manager, or consultant, to analyze the types of management action required to make the desired change to an organization's performance, structure, or culture. As a manager or coach, to analyze the types of intervention required for individual performance improvement. As a salesperson, to gain a better understanding of the motivation behind a purchase. As a coach, to help someone become a more effective leader or manager. As an individual, to gain greater clarity and sense of purpose, or to coach or manage someone to do this, to give and receive feedback effectively. The Neurological Levels Model. The model is based on work done by Robert Diltz and the anthropologist Gregory Bateson. As a student, Diltz worked with Bandler and Grinder, and Bateson provided guidance to all of them in the early days of NLP's development. It considers 6 different levels of thinking and perception. Each level is explained in the following sections and can apply either to organizations or to individuals. Each of the 6 levels has an implied question. The levels, beginning at the bottom, are environment, behavior, capabilities, beliefs and values, identity, and mission or purpose. Each level has an implied question. For environment, where, when? Behavior, what? Capabilities, how? Beliefs and values, why? Identity, who? Mission or purpose, who else? Mission or purpose. This relates to your or your organization's concept of who else is affected by your or its actions. Who else are you, is it serving? What is your, its legacy? An organization might want to consider its impact on anything from the local community through the whole world. You might recognize that your actions impact on a wide range of people. The theory of 6 degrees of separation indicates that we are 6 contacts away from every single person in the world, so what you do, or what your organization does, will impact people whom you might never actually meet. In some schools of NLP, mission or purpose is treated as being outside the neurological levels model, and is sometimes referred to as beyond identity. identity. This relates to your sense of self, who you are. An organization will often cultivate brand identity so that when consumers think of it, they immediately feel that they know who the organization is. You will have a sense of who you are as a person and possibly have a different sense of identity in different contexts. For example, manager at work, parent at home. Some people use metaphors or analogies to describe themselves in certain situations. I'm like a tiger, or lion, or superwoman. Beliefs and values. We touched on these to some degree in Chapter 2. These points, although different from each other, are often linked, and they form the basis for our motivation. Why we do something. Beliefs are convictions we hold as being true, and these shape our behaviors. If you believe you can present well, you will have a different response to being asked to make a presentation compared to someone who believes they cannot present well. We will look at beliefs more closely in Chapter 13. Values are those things that are important to us, or they can be what we want or look for in a particular context. Organizations often display their values in reception, on their website, and on literature. These can act as guiding principles as to how organizations treat staff and customers. Individuals have values in all areas of life, and if you reflect on it for a moment, you will become aware of what is important to you about, for example, your career. Knowing your own career values will help you to make better choices. Knowing other people's values will help you to influence them. We will look at values more closely in Chapter 14. Capabilities. This relates to how things get done, including the skills, abilities, and qualities organizations require and which individuals have. They include strategies used. Behaviors. This is what individuals and organizations actually do. Behaviors can usually be seen or heard and are tangible. HR professionals often combine behaviors and capabilities under the umbrella of competencies, and they are often used as a framework for improving performance and planning training needs, both for individuals and for organizations. Environment. This relates to where something takes place, such as how the work environment looks and feels. It can also be linked to when something takes place. Some key principles about the neurological levels model. Although not directly linked to the hierarchy of ideas covered in Chapter 7, starting with environment, each of the levels is a higher level of abstraction than the previous one. As a general principle, the higher levels have greater influence and power than the lower levels. Changing your sense of identity will normally have a greater impact than changing the color of the office wallpaper. Environment. Similarly, it is normally harder to change the higher levels. Changing the way you greet people, behavior, is probably easier than changing what you believe. For you personally, the more each of the levels align with each other, the more congruent and effective you will be, and the more you will be walking your talk, which will usually lead to your achieving more and having a greater sense of well-being. This is especially true if you have a strong sense of purpose. Great leaders, such as Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, and Winston Churchill, all had a strong sense of what they wanted, especially in respect of topics they felt passionately about: ending apartheid, starting the civil rights movement, and leading Britain through the Second World War, respectively. Successful business leaders such as Henry Ford, Ford Motor Company, Jack Welch, General Electric, Anita Roddick, The Body Shop, and Steve Jobs, Apple, are examples of successful business people who had a clear sense of purpose and truly believed in what they were doing and learned the necessary skills to execute their plans successfully. The same principle applies to organizations. To the extent that organizations walk their talk and encourage the same degree of congruence amongst staff, great results can happen. Please refer to the NASA quote at the start of this chapter. In my career, initially as a management consultant and more recently as a trainer and coach, I have seen some organizations that do walk their talk, and unfortunately many other organizations that espouse certain values in print, but where the directors and senior managers do not actually operate as if those values were in place. Therefore, the extent to which you set business goals that align with the neurological levels will create a powerful recipe for success at work. Because the higher levels are more important and significant than the lower levels, provided that you have a strong enough sense of purpose or mission, identity, beliefs, and values, you will find a way to achieve what you want, even if you don't have the competencies yet or even if the environment is not perfect. Using the neurological levels model to gain alignment. Now let's look at how you can use the model, both individually and as an organization, to gain greater alignment at work. Here is a selection of key questions in both contexts. Individuals. Mission or purpose? Who are you serving in your role? Who else is impacted by those people? What is your purpose in your work or business? Identity. Who are you in your work? What is your sense of self at work? This could be one I am statement or several. Does your sense of self align with your purpose? Beliefs and values. What do you believe about your work and/or employer? What is important to you about your work? What do you believe about your colleagues? What beliefs would be useful for you to adopt? Do your beliefs and values align with and support your identity and purpose? Capabilities. What skills do you have that are relevant to your role? What are your key skills? Which ones would you like to improve or acquire? How will you do that? Do your skills support what you want to achieve and your purpose? Behaviors. Which behaviors do you exhibit at work? Which really support your success, and which ones, if any, in some way hinder it? Environment. Is your environment representative of who you are and what you want to achieve? What aspects of your environment support you, and which hinder you? Organizations. Good business leaders create a vision, articulate the vision, passionately own the vision, and relentlessly drive it to completion. Jack Welch, Chairman and CEO of General Electric from 1981 to 2001. Mission or purpose. Who is your organization serving? What is its purpose and mission? Who else is impacted by the organization's actions? Identity. Who is the organization? How does it see itself? How do its customers and employees see it? Is it aligned with the mission or purpose? Beliefs and values. What does the organization value? What does it stand for? What is important to it about how it interacts with the world, including employees and customers? Do its behaviors always reflect this? What does it believe about itself, its products, its customers, and employees? Capabilities. What skills are important to achieve the organization's goals? To what extent does it have these skills at the moment? Behaviors. What does the organization do? Which behaviors help it to achieve its goals? Which behaviors hinder it? Environment. Does the environment reflect who the organization is and what it wants to achieve? Which aspects of the environment support its staff to excel and which ones hinder them? Which geographic area or areas could it expand into? Exercise 8.1. If you are relatively senior in your organization, including running your own business or run a department, review your organization's or department's performance in light of the neurological levels model. Consider the following questions. To what extent are all the levels in alignment and supporting each other? Are the publicized values acted on in reality, especially when there is some stress or during very busy periods? Is the working environment conducive to excellent work and in accordance with the image you portray publicly? Are your staff adequately trained to deliver the organization's mission? What changes could you make or recommend? Even if you are not in a senior position, running a business or department, you could still benefit from doing this exercise because you would develop a greater understanding of the organization or business. Depending on the organization you work for and the individuals concerned, you might find that your managers or directors are open to discussing it and hearing your thoughts, which might have career benefits. Other applications of the neurological levels model. Organizational change. When making a culture change and seeking to capture the hearts and minds, that is, some of the higher levels, it is important to remember to address change at each level. For example, changing the organization's purpose and mission without addressing the beliefs and values of staff or their capabilities is unlikely to lead to a successful change in culture. Leadership development. you can use the neurological levels model to develop leadership skills, as shown in the following exercise. Management is about doing things right. Leadership is about doing the right things. Peter F. Drucker, management development author and expert. Exercise 8.2, approximately 10 to 15 minutes. Mark out each of the 6 levels on the floor in a line. Starting at environment and working up each of the levels in turn, ask yourself, or your colleague or client if you are a manager or business coach, the following questions at the respective level. Environment: where do you lead? Behaviors: which behaviors do you exhibit as a leader? What do you do? Capabilities: what skills and abilities do you have as a leader? How do you lead? Beliefs and values: what is important to you as a leader? What do you believe as a leader? Identity: who are you as a leader? What's your sense of self as a leader? Mission or purpose: who else are you serving as a leader? Who else is impacted when you lead? At mission or purpose, pause and really consider who else you are serving in your role as a leader or manager, and then turn around and look back along the 5 levels, noticing any insights you might have. Then, return to each of the levels below mission or purpose as follows. Identity: who are you now as a leader? What's your sense of self now as a leader? Beliefs and values: what is important to you now as a leader? What do you believe now as a leader? Capabilities: what skills and abilities do you have as a leader? What skills would you like to learn or acquire? Behaviors: which behaviors do you exhibit as a leader? Which behaviors would you like to change? Which behaviors would you like to learn or adopt? Environment: where do you lead? Where else would you like to lead? After returning to environment, move to the side and step back to notice what you have learned and what action or actions you will take. You can also use this exercise in different contexts apart from leadership, for example, to improve your ability as a manager or salesperson. Giving and receiving feedback. One of the NLP presuppositions is that people are doing the best they can and that their behaviors do not represent their identity. From the neurological levels model, it is important as a manager to recognize that even if someone's behaviors might seem unusual or unhelpful, this is not who they are as a person, identity, and that it is far easier to change behaviors than to change a person. Another useful NLP presupposition is that there is no failure, only feedback. A really useful feedback model is as follows. What did your colleague do well? Speak about behaviors, such as, you drew lots of relevant flipchart diagrams, rather than identity statements, such as, you are an excellent presenter, so that the colleague knows what to repeat. What are one or two things, that is, behaviors, that they could do to make it even better? Stay at behavioral level, as behaviors are relatively easy to change. Keep eye contact is something a colleague can work on. You can't deliver to a large group, capability level, or even worse. You're a nervous presenter, identity level, doesn't help a colleague know what to do, and it can be disempowering. Finish with an overall positive statement, either at behavioral capability or even identity level. You are a good presenter. When receiving feedback, if it is given at a behavioral level, receive it at a behavioral level, and resist any possible reflex action to distort it to be at a capability or identity level, such as, I'm a bad presenter, identity, or I don't make the audience feel comfortable, capability. Feedback is the breakfast of champions. Kenneth Blanchard, author of best-selling book, The 1-Minute Manager. Selling. Certain consumer items, such as jewelry, sports cars, and designer clothes, could be purchased by someone seeking to enhance their sense of identity, as opposed to purely for certain environments or to be purely functional, behavior. As a salesperson, if you can tune into this, you can use the knowledge to sell at the most relevant level. Problem solving. Consultant, coach, manager. When faced with a challenge or problem, seek to identify at which neurological level the problem is, and then address it at least at that level, or possibly a higher level. For example, let's assume you have a colleague who is not effective when chairing meetings. If they simply do not know which behaviors to exhibit, or do not have the necessary skills, that is, behavior and capability levels, then sending them on a training course to learn new competencies will probably help, especially if the course in some way addresses the importance of chairing a meeting well. Values. If, however, they think that they are not the sort of person to chair meetings, identity, then sending them on the training course will be a waste of time and money. Coaching, to address their sense of identity, and even to realize how chairing the meeting could fit in with their own sense of purpose, would be more effective.